This is the Voices in Japan podcast hosted by Ben and Burke, and on this episode we are joined by Alex from England. Alex is a musician and very knowledgeable about different aspects of Japanese music. And in this episode we talk about the different types of Japanese music that are out there, Japanese rock concerts, singing Japanese music at karaoke, Japanese lyrics, and much, much more. We also give recommendations on different types of Japanese music that people can check out, and we're going to list up all of those with links in the episode description, so please be sure to check those out. And we actually recorded this episode in a studio downtown, and in different parts of the episode you can hear some of the bands that were around us practicing, especially in the beginning of the episode, so we hope that's not too distracting. For us, it was a fun and interesting conversation, and if you enjoy it too, please be sure to share it with your friends. Thanks.
1, 2, 3.
Yeah, well deserved, I think.
Yeah,
for sure. Well, I guess we're going to talk about music, but maybe we should first introduce Alex a little bit.
Yeah.
Hey.
Alex has been here probably about the same time out as long as me.
Actually. Yeah.
12 years?
Yeah, well, I was, I think I've lived in Sapporo for just over 10 years. I think I arrived in Japan the month before or month after you. But I also went back to Europe for 2 years. So during the span of 12 years. So I lived here for like six or seven years, and then I went back to Europe for 2 years. To go back to university, and then I came back to Japan after that. So, right. so about just over 10 years in total, yeah. I think.
But you're a big fan of music in general, but also Japanese music.
Yep.
Too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that my first kind of exposure to Japanese music was before I lived here. I came to Japan maybe two times to visit friends who were living here. And the first time I came over here, I visited a friend who was living in Fukuoka, and he played me a cassette which a Japanese friend of his had given him, like, oh, this is a whole bunch of music you might like, kind of thing. And he played me a band called Number Girl, who were, they broke up in early 2000s, I think like around 2002, but they were like a really big deal on the Japanese indie rock scene. And that was the first kind of Japanese music I'd heard, which I was like, oh yeah, this is really, really good. This is really my thing, but not just my thing, just like a really good quality of music, I thought. And so that really made me want to check out more and more Japanese music, I think. Before that, I had tried, because I was coming to Japan and I'm really, really into music, I had tried to check out a whole bunch of Japanese music online, but all the recommendations I found online were stuff that I didn't like.
J-pop.
J-pop, or, and I would say this, I'm a huge music fan and I'm a huge fan of Japanese music, but there are just the same as English music or American music or anything like that. There are a lot of acts that I don't like, and I don't like at all. Yeah. And so a lot of the recommendations for are things that are the biggest artists, and so those are not necessarily the best artists.
Yeah.
So Number Girl, I listened to them, and then after that I went back to England, and I listened to them a bit more, and then when I went back to Japan to live, they were kind of my starting point to kind of start checking out more and more Japanese music, because I would still try and check out Japanese music when I first lived here, but I still couldn't find things easily that I really, really liked. But then branching out from them, I found more and more and more things that I liked.
How is the kind of easy way to go about learning about bands? Is it online, like through other message boards, or is it actually just like asking people that you see out at like little shows and stuff?
I think for me, it's a combination of everything. Yeah. You know, I remember when I first moved here, and I didn't have any internet in my apartment or anything, and I would just go to like the local internet cafe, and then I would just sit there and I would just like follow links, you know, recommend like some website like YouTube or something like that. I'd this was many years ago, so I don't remember what website it was. But it was kind of like, this artist is like this artist. And then I would click on that artist, and I would be like, nope, not this one. And this artist is like this artist. And then I would click on that one, and I'd be like, nope. But then eventually I would find something.
Yeah.
And then after that was talking and knowing more and more Japanese people and getting more recommendations. And then after that, also just going to Tower Records.
Okay.
And listening to stuff. I would just go to Tower Records and
just do that now.
Very rarely. I would say that my life is much busier. I have a family now, and I have my work is much busier. So very rarely I go there. But I still every now and then, yeah. But I used to do that like pretty often. Just go to
the same one over here in Peebo.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
That one. It's pretty amazing that still goes really strong. Because obviously so much has moved over online since like over the past 10, 15 years or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember I used to go there like every Sunday after going out like Saturday nights. That was like one place I would just go hang out every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like a huge Tower record store, checking out the CDs and everything, seeing what's getting popular overseas back home.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, something to kind of wind down after like a heavy night of drinking. But they say it's like pretty surprising that, you know, because like record stores and stuff are supposedly like disappearing more and more, but Tower Records is still very strong.
Yeah, so, yeah, absolutely.
Don't they still have an HMV?
There's an HMV and a Tower Records, I think that since I've lived here, you can definitely see the number of physical music shops getting smaller.
Yeah.
But Japan is apparently, from what I've read, Japan is still the biggest physical music market in the world.
Okay.
And more and more people are moving over to doing things digitally, but there's still a big, big market for CDs.
Yeah, here. Like if you go to the rental shops, everyone's like renting CDs all the time still.
Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas back at home, people don't do that anymore at all.
Yeah.
So that's still quite interesting. And also in Tower Records, they have live bands coming sometimes, right? Like promoting their CDs.
Yeah.
I'm guessing they're not like big acts, like famous people, but probably up and coming groups.
Yeah,
and then you always like a kind of a small crowd of people there.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a live event almost, just in this shop, which is pretty exciting, I think.
There's another interesting thing about Japan is which is pretty obvious to everyone who knows anything about Japan, is people are diehard fans of things, like obsessive diehard fans.
Yeah.
And so there is a big market for pop music acts releasing multiple versions of CD singles with kind of collectible cards or different covers or stuff like that. And that definitely drives the physical music market. So if you're a diehard fan of AKB48 or something like that, then you're going to want to buy the single with the cover of your favorite member and something like that. Or you're going to want to buy all the singles to collect a set and things. And I think that probably that really benefits places like Tower Records.
Yeah, that is such a smart kind of marketing scheme, like what they do.
Yeah.
But I remember when I went home to England, and not many people know who AKB48 are.
Mm.
Do they in America? Are they like big in America?
I wouldn't imagine.
No, it's hard in general for Japanese artists, I think, to get big in the US in general. Number one, it's like if people don't like listening to Japanese like language music in general, it's not going to pick up.
Yeah.
So a lot of them that do have any kind of success are obviously bilingual stars and J-pop stars and stuff. But I think people know, I know people who know AKB48, but just because they're like Asian people living in the U.S. and stuff. So that's probably the only way. But here they're huge, these types of groups, right?
Yeah.
They're probably like the biggest selling group in Japan.
Right now they're one of the biggest selling groups, I think. If you look at like the list of top selling singles of the decade and things like that, it's just all AKB.
Yeah. And then what is AKB48? It's like it's supposed to be 48 members.
Yeah, well, AKB48 is the brainchild of I think his name is Akimura, who has been a long time Akimoto. And he has been a long time like mainstay of the Japanese pop music scene, and he launched this band AKB48, which was meant to be, you know, a huge, huge army of idols, like 48 members. And who became 48 girls, and then so there's a girl next door for everybody kind of thing, I think it was the idea. and And then that branched out into multiple spin-off groups who all have like 48 or more, probably more. I think 48 is just an arbitrary number now. I think probably they all have like hundreds of people in the group.
I have some of those groups. There's a HKT,
yep,
which is from Fukuoka.
Yeah, Hakata.
Yeah, Nagoya has a SKE, Nagoya Sakai.
Okay.
And there's even a JKT, which is Jakarta, Indonesia.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So okay, they're spread now into Asia too.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, I've heard of that one. Yeah.
And he doesn't... he doesn't sit still because, of course, I think that what's happened now is that they've been around for more than 10 years. Well, I reckon they were getting big right around the time when we came to...
I remember when I came, they were huge and they were big before I came too.
Oh, okay.
So maybe when we just came, they were kind of...
huge, yeah, I think. Yeah. But I think that with any young... with any kind of pop music, the next generation wants their own thing. And so he seems to have had the really smart idea of starting... like official rival groups. Have you seen, do you know, like, so Nogizaka 46, it was launched as an official rival group to AKB. So the other ones are sister groups and they're an official rival group. And when the first time I saw them, I had no, they were already getting big and I had no idea where they were. And I was like, 46, is this related to the 48? What is going? And so I looked it up and now there are like two or three, like, so you've got like the 48 family and then you've got the 46 family. And they're all the same company.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But the 40s.
What does that mean? They battle like on stage?
So, no, I don't think so. Just they
it's like
group, like I think it's just meant group. I have no idea. My guess, this is just my guess, is that this is for the new generation of high schoolers who AKB 48 is kind of a legacy act, you know, like they're, and so he brings out something that's slightly different style and that's with a slightly different name and it's meant to be this is for your generation or something like that.
Yeah.
That's just
those groups do really well. I mean, I think we talked about it in a previous episode. I can't remember which one, but just talking about like how they have it, I think it's for AKB48, they have that concert room like down somewhere in Tokyo.
Yeah.
Akihabara.
But when you watch it, it's like all the young girls, like, I mean, how old are they? Like between like 10 and 20 or something?
I don't know.
16 to 20
is
like
I have no idea.
It's like a stage of these young girls dancing, sometimes in slightly risque clothing, and then the audience is just like all middle-aged men. Otaku, Japanese men and stuff.
Yeah, I think that I think that that is their kind of foundation. But then the thing that always surprised me and stopped surprising me many years ago was that they crossed over to being popular with, like, high school girls.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Like, they definitely are. They definitely have. Because they couldn't really... I don't think they could dominate Japan's pop music scene in quite the way if it was only middle-aged men, only otaku middle-aged men that they were appealing to. But I was always surprised when they really did cross over because for a long time I was just like, well... yeah, I can understand why this is popular with otaku, but
Don't they have like that competition like every year where on TV where like the most popular group member or something?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, they call it the general election. So there's like a ranking system where there's the 48 members, and then the higher the ranking goes, they become more prominent in the group. So obviously number one would be the girl that's at the front in the center, and to get that popularity vote, you have to buy a single, and then in the single have a voting slip.
Oh wow!
But you only get one voting slip per single,
so
it encourages encourage people to buy more than one single and to vote for the same person. So there was actually a news article where they found 2.5 million copies of AKB48 singles in the trash.
Oh,
just to vote.
Yeah, so they obviously they had the single, so then they would buy multiples and multiple singles.
Oh my
gosh!
And
then they just threw them away
because
they just wanted to get this girl or their favorite member to reach the number one spot.
Did you know that family travel has the incredible power to shape our children's worldview and create lasting memories? In a world where representation is often lacking, it's essential for our children to see themselves reflected in every aspect of life, including the stories we tell about travel. Introducing the Travel of Legacy podcast, where we're rewriting the script by celebrating the diverse voices of Black and Brown family travelers. Each episode of Travel of Legacy is a testament to the enriching power and the joy of exploration in Black and Brown communities. So journey with us and subscribe now.
I'm assuming this is like 2.5 million copies in total, not from like, not from like one guy.
But this was found in like, just in one rubbish area. So, could happen in different locations.
Well, during that TV program, general election, those girls that are getting like voted in the top five, man, they're like super happy, crying. I'm assuming it's all genuine. And then beyond that, like when they graduate, as they call it, like some of them move on to TV stardom or like regular idol stardom in Japan. So,
yeah,
you know, it's a good avenue towards fame for the younger girls, and it's a huge money making machine.
Yeah. And obviously their salary goes up, but, I heard the starting salary, like when they start as a probably 16-year-old, it's pretty low. It's like 45,000 yen a month.
I would imagine.
So that's the starting.
Oh, a month.
Yeah.
Well, 16-year-old, that's not too bad.
Yeah. But like, it depends. It doesn't matter how old you are, just if you start. So you could be starting at 20 years old.
Yeah,
it's still 45,000. Yeah. But when you get up to the higher rankings, you can go up to like 12 million yen a year. And that's it. But that's including like sponsorship. That's including appearances on TV.
Yeah. All the commercials that they do and stuff like that. Yeah.
So it's it could be worth doing it. I mean, it's a hard life because they've got busy schedules. No boyfriends.
And really, really controlled. Really controlled.
I mean, I've talked about it before. I have a daughter, and I fear the day that she may walk up and say she wants to do something like that. And I'm like, how about you try this out? I don't know if I'd want to see that.
Yeah. But, you know, you'll get a lot of money and respect as a doctor.
Exactly. But is that, that's not the really the type of music you're into?
No, not at all.
So what type of music do you like?
I'm a modern music fan. I really like any kind of genre. So I do like some pop music.
Yeah.
And I would say there are some good AKB48 songs.
They're fun, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. There are some ones where I listen to it and I can say, oh, this is a well-written song. Like, this is catchy and, you know, it's fun and it's not boring. And so, you know, there are some music like that. I come from probably mostly from a rock music background. So I like music with guitars and things like that. But I like a lot of anything. But, you know, like when I went to university, my tastes broadened, and so I listen to absolutely anything.
J-pop artists that you could recommend other than AKB48 that people are trying to get into? I'm trying to remember which ones I like.
So for pop music, the band who I would say that I genuinely, not absolutely everything, but like, but I generally like is Perfume. Perfume are a three-piece like girl band.
Still going strong.
Did
you see them when they performed maybe last year or 2 years ago at the rock festival out in the
I saw them at the
I did at Rising Sun.
They performed at Rising Sun, and that was one of the reasons why I liked them already, but then they really earned a lot of respect because they dealt with that really, really well. They played at a rock festival, and their I guess the leader, the main kind of the woman who does the most talking, was really good at working the crowd, like a rock music crowd. But they were playing like, I think, in like one of the big prominent mid-afternoon, popular mid-afternoon slots, where lots of people turn up.
Because obviously Rising Sun Rock Fest was a rock concert.
Most
of the bands are very kind of rocky.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Was that like one of the first times a kind of pop group performed?
No, I don't think so. I would imagine not. I don't think so. I think that there's probably a lot less I think in England, if there's a big rock festival, there have been famous incidents in England where there's a big rock festival and a pop act performs and then they get like bottles thrown at them and things. And I think that in Japan that wouldn't really happen. And so I'm sure there have been other pop acts who have played at Rising Sun. It's ostensibly a rock festival, but I've been to a couple of them where there are lots of hip hop acts, like a whole chunk of hip hop acts.
Yeah,
and they have an all night DJ They have an all-night dance tent, like that. So
when is Rising Sun again? Is it August or is it?
Yeah, it's generally around Obon holiday in August. There's a bank holiday, or not bank holiday? Sorry, there's a national holiday. that's British.
Yeah.
British. There's a national holiday around that day, and it's usually around that weekend because Rising Sun is a big rock festival in Hokkaido. That runs for basically two or 3 days, but it's called Rising Sun because the second day goes all night until the sun comes up in the morning. So
that's the last day. The last day.
Yeah.
And so, you normally go every year?
I go as often as I possibly can. So yeah, I've been. There was 1 year when I didn't go because I left it way too late to get tickets and it was sold out. Yeah, but I go every year if I possibly can.
I've been twice. We went together 1 year. So yeah. That was my first year there, and we camped. Yeah. The weather wasn't so good the first day, I remember.
No.
But for me, that was the first, I guess, Japanese music concert I've been to, because it's all just Japanese music. There's no foreign bands there, unless you can count Okidub Ainu.
No, you shouldn't. You shouldn't. They should be extremely Japanese. They're the original Japanese.
They're amazing, those guys. Like Okinawan, kind of funky Okinawan music.
Well, kind of. It's Ainu, but it's...
Funky Ainu music, and it's really dancey.
Yeah.
So it's not like your traditional stuff. And I remember that was probably my favorite group that I saw.
Cool.
So the Ainu people are the indigenous people to Hokkaido.
Yes.
And so this is a group made up of only Ainu people, or is it Ainu music and they let other people?
I'm not sure. My guess would be, from what I know about them, that there's like a core of Ainu musicians, but they do kind of like dancey, electronic-y kind of influenced traditional music, and so I would guess that they work with non-Ainu people as well.
Okay.
But the core of the band is, I think.
Yeah. All right. So they were my favorite, and also Suckin' Action.
You like Mannix, right? Yeah, I think Suckin' Action are one of the big bands at the moment because they're getting bigger and bigger all the time. They're one of the big bands which I would really say stand up in terms of quality, even from an international perspective, even comparing them with anything else in the world. So they are an electronic indie band, basically.
Is someone from Hokkaido?
They formed in Hokkaido. And the main guy, Yamaguchi Ichiro, is from Otaru, I think.
Otaru. Okay.
But him and the guitarist got together to play shows in Sapporo originally, when they lived in Sapporo. And then, just like every band in Japan, when they get big, they move to Tokyo. They start off playing kind of quite melancholy indie music, kind of guitars and things like that, and then they add more and more electronic elements, and then some of their albums are really quite dancey, basically. And from what I know, they've, for the last few years, they play at a smaller music festival called Join Alive in Hokkaido.
Yeah.
And they play there, and every year they play like probably a headlining set there, and then they do an all night, quote unquote, rave, kind of.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like they have a DJ dance. This is at Join Alive. They do a headlining set, and then they go and they do like a big electronic dance thing all night.
You've been to that?
No, I haven't been to that actual thing, but a friend of mine was telling me all about it.
Our age are a little older too, aren't they? But they're still going hard like that, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know. They've only been, they were around in the last 10 years, basically. They've started, I think, probably about 10 years ago, my guess.
So would you say now how popular would you say they are?
Very, very popular now.
In Japan?
Yes, very, very popular in Japan in general. I think they are on a continual upswing, and probably will be a mainstay of Japanese kind of guitar indie-ish pop music for a long time, I would guess.
Because I saw them the first time when we went to Rising Sun, which was probably about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think then they were coming up, signs get real big, so it's good to see that they're so big now.
Yeah.
And I actually met the lead singer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, at Rising Sun.
Oh, really?
So
that's awesome.
1 year I went, and we went with a couple of friends. They came to visit from Tokyo. And he was dancing in the crowd.
Like, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But no one noticed him.
Oh,
no
that's...
one recognized him. Well, my friend, who's a really big fan, who, like, loves him, she was like, "That's that guy there." And I was like, "Well, go talk to him. Go talk to him." And she was just too shy to talk to him. I was like, "Well, I'm going to go talk to him." So then I went over, started talking, danced with him, and then I got my friend to come over, and then we took like a group photo together.
That's awesome.
Nice. Yeah.
And then he just like carried on dancing, and no one noticed him. Well, maybe they did, and they just left him alone.
Yeah.
But that was, it was really nice.
That's actually what I heard as well about this, the all night dancing thing, the all night thing that they're doing at Join the Live, is that he was just after, he probably did it like a DJ thing, and then afterwards he was just walking around and dancing and kind of just in the crowd.
Yeah.
So he's a, it's a, they're a, I think they're a really good band. They're, I don't love absolutely everything that they do, but they do a lot of good stuff, and he's definitely a kind of an auteur kind of artist. He really kind of probably works a lot on creating these kind of soundscapes and trying to create his vision in the music, which is quite, it's quite smooth, and but it's interesting.
So. Yeah, they're said to. I saw him perform at Makamunai Arena maybe, and man, I just remember the next day my calves were so sore because like. Japanese concerts, everyone basically just jumps continually from start to finish. I didn't want to be the only one not
all together
jumping.
As well, right?
Yeah, so I was just sitting there jumping for like whatever 2 hours or something, and the next day my calves were shot. But,
yeah.
Anyway, Second Action, so
yep.
That's another one.
Yeah, Second Action.
Yeah. So. Yeah, Perfume,
Second Action. Yeah, Second Action. So that's kind of the pop music stuff. So, like I say, the band who got me into Japanese music, or who made me kind of be like, well, there's really good Japanese music, is Number Girl, who were really influential in the Japanese guitar music scene, who broke up and who reformed this year.
After 17 years
after they broke up, they reformed this year and were supposed to play Rising Sun this year. And I was extremely, extremely excited about that. And then first day of Rising Sun was cancelled because of a typhoon.
Oh.
So there, the all the artists on the first day were cancelled.
Oh,
yeah.
That was this year.
That was this year. So the first time ever it's ever been cancelled.
I was going
for the weekend. Mm. But that was the day they were playing. And so then I was annoyed. And apparently reasons they got back together was that they played Rising Sun in 1999. So they were like, and they were kind of got back on friendly terms, and then they were like, it would be cool to play Rising Sun again 20 years later.
Yeah.
And then it got cancelled, but they're going to come back and play Sapporo in January, and I've got tickets for that. So
we're at
Zepp.
Zepp, okay.
Yeah, so Zepp is the medium-sized venue in Sapporo for bands to play.
Yeah.
So Number Girl I really like, and they play, the early stuff is very, very influenced by just American indie rock of the 80s, Pixies and things like that. And then slowly they never stop moving, and so that each album gets a little bit more experimental and starts to bring in more and more Japanese influences, and especially kind of dub bass lines and things like that. And then after the band broke up, the main singer, who goes by Mukai Shutoku, continued and made a new band called Zazen Boys, who basically continued the progression of Number Girl, getting more and more kind of experimental. And that's, I'd say, my favorite band at the moment.
Zazen Boys are,
and it's definitely a band which I listened to when I first listened to them. I was like, this is really good and very, Japanese as well. It sounds Japanese without being too traditional, and it kind of really blends a lot of different influences in an interesting way. So,
what do you think? Like you were saying, like Japanese influence or makes it Japanese. How do Japanese indie bands sound? Like what's different about it, or what makes it kind of? Is it very similar still? Or?
I think.
I mean, they're singing in Japanese.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. in terms of Zazen Boys, it means. I mean, they introduce some kind of the modality of traditional Japanese music. So some of the melodies and harmonies and things like that, and he would start to use little bits of. Kind of Buddhist chanting or something like that, or Shinto chanting and things like that.
Traditional
instrument? No, not at all. But the thing was, I think to read an interview with him, he just does this because it sounds cool. It's not like he's just trying to bring more and more influences into his music. And I think another thing which I read was like, he wanted to do more stuff like Prince or something as well. So they started using more keyboards and stuff. So it's just mixing lots of different influences in. So I think that one of the things which I, where I get turned off a lot of bands though, is where I listen to them and I'm like, well, yeah, this just sounds like an American band. But it sounds like they're trying to be like an American band or something. So one of the, this is me, this is where I'm going to badmouth somebody who lots of people love, but one of the really, really big bands who, again, reformed this year after a 10-year break is Elgarden, Erugarden.
Erugarden.
Yeah, and they are really, a really, really, really polished rock band, like really satisfying, big, chunky rock band, who to me sound like a early 2000s American emo band. And that's exactly what they want to sound like, I think. They really want to sound like that. That's their influence. But then I'm listening to that, and for Japanese people, I think it's great that they have someone who's doing that music if they want that music. But for me, it's kind of like, well, I don't need to.
Or listen to a band.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I can just listen to. It's very derivative, and so the bands I think Sakon Action I think probably have bring in influences that make that in one way or another kind of add a. Speak to a kind of their Japanese heritage or to Japan and that kind of thing. They're influenced by lots of different things, and and so that kind of thing is interesting. It more, makes bands more interesting for me. I mean, that said, the other kind of extreme of that is a band who are doing something like just trying to put a koto in or a shamisen in a song. But it's in a really kind of clumsy way. I think it's difficult for bands to blend those things in a way that's satisfying. But
you pay attention to the lyrics a lot.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Are the lyrics, the things they're singing about, is it pretty similar to what like foreign bands? I mean, I guess foreign bands, you can't really say they're all singing about this or that. Yeah. But I mean, are they singing about Japanese stuff? Are they singing like? About daily life in Japan, or what kind of?
It depends. Yeah. It depends on the band, really. So I think that a long time ago, I had a very drunken night out with some Japanese musicians, and they were trying to. We had a long conversation where we were trying to pin down the difference between kind of a Japanese approach to writing lyrics in America, or English or English language approach to writing lyrics, and there. One guy's passionate point that he kept making was that there are so many specifics in English language music. So people will sing about it, like very specific scenes, or whereas lots and lots of Japanese lyrics will be less specific, and they'll create more of a feeling or more of a scene without talking about specific things. And I think that's true to a point, but of course there's always going to be exceptions. So yeah, I do listen to the lyrics more and more, and as my Japanese got better and better, I find myself listening to stuff more and more and more.
And what you just described, yeah. That guy explained the difference between, you know, the lyrics. Yeah. It kind of is related to the culture as well.
Yes, yeah, I think
how Japanese are very vague when they like explain things. Not always, but less. Yeah. Specific. So if you ask for a Japanese person's opinion, they'll be very vague about it, and they want you to kind of read between the lines. Yeah. They won't be direct.
Yeah, so. There's something I read a long time ago. This actually comes into my area of academic study, which is about language. And Japan is said by some, you know, this is one reading, to be a high context language. So. Basically, a lot of the information in what people are saying is expected to be understood from the context, from the surrounding situation. So, and of course, that's part of that is to do with Japan being a bit of a monoculture. Mm. And everybody kind of assumes that everybody is on the same wavelength with certain things. And so you don't need to go into all this detail because everyone just understands. And then something like English is a low context language. Like people, it needs more information, more detail in the language. And so I think that probably comes across in the lyrics.
Well, that's I've always kind of wondered, like, can Japanese musicians, I mean, obviously music has been in Japan for probably from the beginning, but can Japanese musicians do Western style of music like rock or something, but still, like, is it completely different? Or are they expressing themselves in a completely different way and stuff? So it's always been interesting.
Yeah, I do think that there are really, really, really good bands in Japan who are very, very influenced by certain aspects of American music. I mean, that's probably, I mean, when you think about the beginnings of Japanese music, it's American influence after the Second World War. And really kind of starting people using electric guitars and things like that. And so I think that there are definitely bands who are trying to copy or trying to do a really Japanese take, not Japanese, really a really close take on what their idols, American or British musicians, have done. An example, but and so then they maybe are trying to copy the, exactly the kind of things that they talk about, you know. And then maybe an example would be the Blue Hearts, who are a really good Japanese punk band. Really good, really influential Japanese punk band, who extremely influenced by people like the Ramones. They that's what they do basically. And then the singer and the guitarist from the Blue Hearts have gone on to do a series of other bands where they basically do the same thing, you know, in a really good way. They are, I am not, this is not meant to be looking down on them at all, but probably some of their lyrics, then you would think it's a little bit more kind of grounded in kind of the same kind of thing that, an American band would sing about. Mm-hmm. And then there's other artists who are probably definitely influenced by maybe Japanese literature traditions, and they really want to kind of represent. And I think probably more and more now it's artists being influenced by other Japanese artists rather than by Western artists. Mm.
So these groups you're talking about right now, are they the ones that you sing at karaoke?
Or no, I sing everything at karaoke. karaoke.
J-pop.
So talking about
a great way to practice.
Yeah. So at karaoke, I do when I go to karaoke. So karaoke is about singing songs that you want to sing, but also, of course, it's about like the group of people.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to learn some songs that people know, right. You know, crowd pleasers,
yeah,
basically.
So everyone can all sing together.
Yeah. So I know I learned a few Enka songs.
I love listening to Enka and karaoke.
Yeah.
Like, I always request my friends, my Japanese friends to sing Enka because it seems like there's a lot of emotion into it.
Yeah.
You can see them really trying hard and.
Yeah.
And I always request that.
It's fun. It's fun to sing.
Yeah.
So I do.
Easier to swing.
They can be kind of slow, and the Japanese can actually be a little bit easier to do sometimes, even though sometimes it's very, very poetic, but it can still be easier to kind of follow along with.
It's Japanese traditional music, right?
Yeah. Japanese traditional music, basically. Japanese traditional music. And so I sing Kitajima Saburo. The song Matsuri is just a really good, solid, manly, like roaring Enka song to do. And then for the pop one, Hikawa Kiyoshi Zundokubushi is really good for, if you're singing that in karaoke with a bunch of Japanese people, they will do the backing vocal. Almost without, there is like a backing chant, and they will do that almost without exception. Especially if you're a foreign person singing in karaoke, and they're like, oh my gosh, this guy can sing a song. Yeah, so... for other songs, I sing Second Action. I do a few Second Action songs because they're really popular now. And so you start singing Second Action. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, I like Second Action.
Are they quite hard to sing, though?
It depends on the song. Some of them, well, I saw them live, and he was talking about, they did one song, and he's like, oh, yeah, we rarely play this song because it's really hard to sing or something like that. And so, yeah, it is pretty hard to sing. And I don't do, for example, like one of my favorite bands, like Number Girl and Zazen Boys, I don't really sing that because they're not, like, so big. They're like, a really big for diehard music fans. But I wouldn't really sing their songs because they don't really go over so well.
People wouldn't know about.
Yeah, so they wouldn't get such a good reaction. I learned a few songs by Unicorn. That's another band to which I would recommend. Cool. Unicorn. Unicorn are I think early 90s. I want to say early 90s indie pop band. This is a really bad comparison, but my vague comparison is someone like Madness in England, who are a band who would just be very silly and do lots of pop stuff, but they were still a band and they would play very tight music kind of thing. They're not ska. I mean, Madness are ska, so Unicorn are not ska, although they're very, 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 very broad, wide-ranging set of influences. And Unicorn have lots of sing-along songs that Japanese people love and I really like. They're difficult to sing, lots of words, but really, really fun to do. And so I do a few Unicorn songs as well.
Do you sing any Japanese songs, Burke?
I have a couple that I try to sing, but the one that I always want to sing but I can't hit the high note is Remi Oromen, Konayuki.
Oh, yeah.
It's really good for Hokkaido because it's about snow and it's a love song. Yeah. Everybody knows it, so it's been really popular. But man, that high note that he hits, like I can never hit it. So I would ask somebody else to sing the chorus. But I like singing Nemuri Odomen. Can't remember. I'm drawing a blank on some of it. How about you? Do you sing it?
There's one, the anchor one that Alex first mentioned. I don't know the name of the names of many of the songs, but that one. Was it called Matsuri?
Matsuri.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. So I always try to sing that one.
That's good.
But mainly, English songs. But I'll try to bang out one Japanese one for the Japanese crowd.
And
if I'm with Japanese friends, they love it when a foreigner sings a Japanese song.
Yeah, of course.
And
of course,
it doesn't matter how bad you sing it.
Yeah.
You'll get a big round of applause, cheers. Mm-hmm. So it gives you a bit of confidence in your singing, even if you're so good.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. It's good. It's fun to do. It's fun to be able to sing Japanese songs, especially if you go to like a bar that just has karaoke, like a karaoke book, a karaoke machine. Not when you're not even with your friends, and then like.
Oh, like you mean like British style?
I mean, we're getting into Japanese nightlife.
That's called a hostess club.
But no, not a hostess club. Just like but one of these little hole in the like single room bars where they just have a karaoke machine.
Sounds like a hostess club.
Snack bars. Snack bar.
There you go. I was going to say. So now you're going to get into like the definition of a snack bar and whether that's the same as a hostess club and stuff.
Snack bar. Yeah. Which snack bar sometimes can have the different image, but it's usually just a mama-san who has a bar, and she'll have like a karaoke machine too.
Why is it called a snack bar?
I have no idea.
Why is it? Because you're not. I guess you're eating snacks too. Mm-hmm. But
well. On that theme, I went to the saddest snack bar that I've ever been to a while ago, and it was like just a one room place in a building in Siskino, and it seemed to be run by like two or three guys who I don't know, I have no idea. They were like two or three young guys, just kind of like really slacky looking guys behind the and the food that they served was exactly that, just like bags of crisps and snacks and potato chips and stuff, and it was all just like masking taped to the wall. And it was like, this was their, I don't know if that was meant to be a thing or if it was just that they were too lazy to like organize any other food. It was just like, but it was not. It was fine.
Were there a lot of people in there?
No.
Just
friends. I went because somebody knew. I went because I went with someone who knew those people. And then I was like, oh, this is interesting.
Well, snack bars are everywhere. There's like right in the neighborhood, local neighborhood. They're down in Siskino, everything.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the point of them is, you can go there by yourself and basically you're just hanging out with the owner and the owner's very happy to talk to you and sing songs with you. Mm-hmm. So it's all, I think that's the main difference between a regular bar and a snack bar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Another good place to practice Japanese and stuff.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But obviously it's quite expensive, isn't it?
It can be, yeah.
And usually people buy their own drink of maybe a bottle of sake that they keep there and it has their name on there so they can come anytime. Yeah.
How about recommendations? Recommendations, Ben, do you have any specific recommendations? I was trying to think of one myself. Do you guys like Japanese reggae at all?
Not really. Depends, it depends. There's good stuff. I mean, there's a lot of people in Japan who really like that reggae style.
I like this guy, Ricky G. He's comes and performs like once a year, so we've gotten to see him twice, once in Otaru, once in Sapporo. My wife knew him from a long time ago, but he's kind of like, he's not really big, but he's has a strong fan following, and so we've kind of see his. And I think reggae might be big in Japan because it is an island nation.
It's interesting.
It has a little bit of that flavor to it and stuff. But
one of the big Japanese rock bands at the moment is called Wanima, and Wanima play like pop punk, but their style is very like reggae style. They just have taken this like reggae the colors and things like that. It's really interesting.
So have you guys been to a lot of concerts in Japan? I've only been to a rock festival. I've never actually been to a proper concert. To see bands in like a concert hall or anything, because I noticed that the crowds in Japan are very different from like back in England or back in America.
I think it depends.
Yeah, depends on the music.
I think it depends on the music. I think that this is something that's probably worth talking about because it's quite interesting. Because going to Rising Sun Rock Festival, so I have a friend who always kind of complains about going there and having come from England, has this expectation that a festival is going to be crazy, like everything, all like everyone's just out of their heads and
with
everything's
going.
Yeah, exactly. And Japan, everybody, even in a rock festival, everyone is very considerate of other people. So the whole atmosphere is way more chill and way more laid back, which is really nice in a lot of ways. I mean, I've been to rock festivals in England, which I really didn't really have that much fun because, you know, it's a mess. It's a mess, man. It was really stressful. And so that's really quite nice. And I think at a lot of concerts as well, yeah, people will be a little bit more restrained or a little bit more kind of held back. That said, I saw Maximum the Hormone playing at Rising Sun, and it was insane. It was insane. There was like a 1,000 person circle mosh. The mosh pit extended like so far back from the main stage. It was like way up to like where the tents were and stuff like that. And people were still like thrashing around and stuff like this. And
so it depends on the artist.
I think it depends a lot on the artist.
But
yeah.
But it seems like depending on the artist, everyone kind of follows the same
mood. Yeah. Definitely.
I remember that same issue you were talking about at Rising Sun, mm-hmm. and I saw Shina Ringo. So I saw her, and she was playing a very nice kind of slow song, mm-hmm. But it was dead quiet, mm-hmm. dead quiet, and there was, you know, hundreds of people around. She was on the main stage, and you could hear people whispering. So I started talking during it, and I was like, why is it so quiet? And then someone in front of me turned around and was like, shh. And I was like, this is a rock concert.
No, but I think that this was when we went and I went to see the same thing. And I mean, I think we're probably running out of time but one of the people that I would really recommend as an artist is Shina Ringo. I'm a huge fan of Shina Ringo as well. So that was one of my things where I followed like the link from Number Girl to Shina Ringo. And that was actually like, I mean, now I have more perspective on it. That was kind of a very special, like, that was her kind of like anniversary return to Rising Sun. And she normally plays big rock music.
Yeah, she's doing ballads.
And she was doing like a piano and string quartet special kind of performance. But she's super famous. And so, yeah, probably everyone was like, oh, this is so special. This is so special. Everyone must be quiet. And, you know, if you weren't really tuned into that wavelength, that must have seemed really weird.
Yeah,
I think that, yeah, definitely in Japan, but what you said is absolutely true. Like when it's time to be quiet, Japanese people will be much quieter than Western audiences.
I've also heard of like famous bands from England coming over to Japan to play live, like Coldplay. U2 and stuff, and they're always trying to get the crowd more fired up.
Yeah,
kind of a bit quiet. Mm-hmm. And they're like, "Hey, you know what's going on, guys? Yes. Let's get up," because they're not the same as British crowds.
Yeah.
Even though they're big fans and they're into it, but it's just their way of reacting to music.
I think it's interesting as well. And this is another topic, but one of the things you've got to remember as well in Japan is that Japanese music accounts for 90% or probably, I don't know, more of the market. So when there is a band like Coldplay or U2 or something like that that comes over here, like people will go and see them, and because it's a big international band and they're world famous. And so everybody knows who they are, but they don't necessarily know all of the songs or connect. Some people will. There's a lot of people who will be a big Coldplay fan or something, but they won't kind of connect with a vast audience in the same way as a Japanese band. You know, people will go to, because it's a really exciting thing to go and see a big international band, but they don't like that's actually a really small share of the market. I looked on the Oricon singles and albums chart this week and did some preparation for the podcast, and like the top selling albums in Japan this year, in the top 50, there's like one Western artist of the top selling, which is Taylor Swift, and she's at like number 33.
Oh wow!
And other than that, it's Korean music is popular in Japan. K-pop is popular in Japan, and then it's just all Japanese music is there, and when I say 90% and 10%, probably most of that 10% of foreign music is Korean music, and so there's just a very, very few super big international artists.
Okay. So in a way, because they're not like super fans, they don't really know how to behave or respond.
But also, I do think as well that there will be a tendency in Japan for people to, when a to stand and watch a song. Mm. Rather than like, and watch the music, and then in between, do a big
kind of like respect, you know. Exactly. This artist has put into preparation.
Because it's the same with like UFC. So when they come to Japan, the crowd are always very quiet.
Really?
So I remember especially the trainers or the corner men that they're shouting advice to their fighters.
Yeah.
Normally at a UFC event, you can't hear them. Like, especially when you're watching on TV.
Yeah.
But when you're watching TV in Japan, you can hear really clearly.
Well, they're almost the only people that are saying anything.
Yeah.
I went and saw an event in Tokyo, and it was very much like that. I mean, there was an occasional hoots and hollers, but it was mostly from foreign people who had come to see the event.
Interesting.
And stuff, so.
Yeah. My father-in-law went, I took my my in-laws to England once, and I took my father-in-law to a football match, and he was... He was like, that was one of his big comments, was like, everyone is just shouting all the time. He loved it. He was really interested in it. But like, in comparison with like Japanese sporting events, where people will be really loud when there's this organized chant or something like that, but then in between they're just going to be chilling.
I felt that was the same at the Rugby World Cup when I went to see England versus Tonga.
Oh, really?
So during the game it wasn't constantly cheering and shouting, you know, and it was actually quite quiet.
Yeah.
So even when I was talking to someone, I could hear my voice very clearly. I didn't have to raise my voice at all.
But it was fairly well attended.
It was really well attended. Then it was like you said, like organized chanting. So someone would start singing a Swing Low song, and then everyone would be singing it. But during those points that no one was chanting, it was kind of quiet, subdued.
Interesting. Yeah.
Well, running a bit out of time. Alex, is there anything else you wanted to mention?
Yeah, so if I'm going to be on the podcast, then I think probably my wife would not like it if I didn't mention one more recommendation, which is there's a Japanese band called Fishmans.
Fishmans,
who I think are really, really good. They're a band that I found a few years ago. Sadly, the singer died, so they made a couple of really, really good albums, and that's another band which I think are... kind of really difficult to pin down, difficult to kind of explain. They're kind of a little bit reggae, a little bit dub, but and then a little bit pop, and a little bit this and this, and very dreamy kind of music. And I'd recommend
Fishmans.
It's written in katakana, of course, so Fishmans, I guess. But yeah. Other than that, I think
your wife's favorite band.
No. Just a band that we found together, and we're both like, this is really nice.
Do you get most of your music online now, Japanese music, or are you getting it at Tower Records?
Like a combination, man. I feel like in Japan it's definitely in a period of transition between of everyone, what's available, how to get it, and things like that. There are people sell their music online, people sell their music at Tower Records. Sometimes it's quite tricky to work out what's the best way to get something, but a little bit of everything, I think. So,
cool.
I think.
All right. Yeah. I think there's a lot more that we could have talked about and stuff.
Yeah, I think we covered a lot today. Thanks for coming.
You're welcome.
On a podcast,
thanks,
Alex,
for asking me. It's very comfortable.
Yeah, you know a lot more about music than I do, especially Japanese music. I've probably heard about two of those bands that you mentioned.
Okay, these are just my taste, you know. It's like, I think that's the main thing, is that I spent a lot of time just digging through and listening to lots of different stuff, and then I just found what I liked. So I think that anyone could find lots of really good Japanese music
for me, I kind of find music on recommendation from friends, so I think I'm going to check out a lot of your recommendations.
Yeah, cool. Too.
Thanks for coming out.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
Yes, thank you. All right, we'll see everyone again next time.